Turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians 5. And the Lord's Supper is kind of a good transition into this class. I finished this first before I did the Lord's Supper stuff. But when we talk about elevating our thinking, and we talk about having a different perspective or a different view on certain things, and that's very true, obviously, for righteous things, but it's also something that is true for unrighteous things. Let's go ahead and read Ephesians 5, 3 and 4.
But immorality or any impurity or greed must not even be named among you as is proper among saints, and there must be no filthiness and silly talk or coarse jesting which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks.
Okay, so we could go in depth on every individual deed of the flesh, well, let's call it that. And we're going to go into some things, but I think we first need to look at one in particular. It's going to help us explain the others. And in verse 4, the word filthiness is what the New American Standard has translated. Let there be no filthiness. This is the only time that it's used in the New Testament. But it means baseness. And does anybody know what baseness means?
Baseness.
So baseness is a lack of moral principles or a bad character, or it's like a low rank. Okay, so if we look at that for a second, and sometimes we think, you know, we read immorality and impurity, you know, that someone has to be intentional to be immoral or impure. And what we, this is where it's going to kind of tie back into the past classes that we've been doing. And when we looked in chapter 2, we looked at love, and we talked about how, on a spiritual scale, you either love or you hate. There's no in-between. There's no love less. Because when you love less, when you're supposed to love, when God instructs us to love and we love less, we actually are hating the person. If we're supposed to hate what's evil and we don't hate it, then we're actually loving it. Even though we might not really love it, we're not hating it. And so the same is true here as well when we are looking at morality or immorality. Okay, so for example, if we were to, you could have someone who wasn't, we'll just say, we'll just throw out abortion, okay, since that's an easy one. Someone might not be pro-abortion, but they're not anti. Okay, so when we talk about baseness here, when we're looking at that, because that the baseness doesn't mean that, I mean, it's translated filthiness, but what that means means is basically, I guess what I first thought of when I read it and looked at the definition, it's almost like we have lowered our standard, lowered our rank, and, well, we're just human. And we start thinking like that, and we start thinking that, we start thinking less of ourselves than what God expects of us, for example. And so, in other words, we might be like, well, we're not the ones that are maybe performing the abortion, or not the ones that are maybe even voting for abortion or anything. But if we're not standing against it, we still have lack of morals. Okay, so our morals are lacking, and so we're really immoral, even though we're really not the one who is pushing it. Okay, and the same would go for homosexuality or any other immoral thing. Okay, baseness is the lack of something good, lack of good morality, and so the lack of it. Even though we are not maybe specifically being immoral, we are still immoral if we don't stand up against it, and if we don't have good morality. Okay, so similar to the love-hate deal we talked about. Let's look at a couple perspectives here. Let's turn back to Genesis 3. Genesis 3. Does someone want to read 7 through 10, please, of Genesis 3?
And the eyes of them, the eyes of both of them were open, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves loin coverings. And they heard the sound of the Lord walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. And the Lord God called to the man and said to him, "Where are you?" And he said, "I heard the sound of thee in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, so I hid myself."
Okay, so another thing that when we look at the word baseness, the Greek word for that, it's also implied that it's shameful, which, I mean, we would all agree with that too, is that, okay, so someone maybe is not performing the abortion, but they're not standing against it. That would be shameful. Okay, so consider that. Think of that for a second. Now apply that when you have. Why did Adam and Eve? Why does it say that they hid themselves? I should say the less obvious answer. Why did they hide themselves?
Shame.
Shame or afraid. Okay, so they were afraid, and so they hid himself. They hid themselves. So they were afraid because they were naked, and that they're under someone who has a somewhat or a morality that still is shameful, even though there's a lot of people today that don't care whatsoever. But what under some, like, so that's why Adam was afraid, and that's why they hid themselves. That's why they sewed fig leaves together, and that's why they hid themselves. So they were afraid. They lowered, if you will, because of their sin, they lowered the rank, or they lowered the standard, and it was shameful of what God had. Now, under a righteous standard, in that case with Adam and Eve there, it's not shameful with a husband and wife, okay? But when you lower the standard, it is shameful, even though you got people today who have dove headlong into that, and it doesn't, you know, it's not really shameful to them because their conscience is really seared. But that, we'll get to that in a second here. So when we look on that idea, what we have to do then in this principle is with baseness is we have to elevate our thinking to God's standard. There is no shame. We talk about that. So baseness is not moral, and therefore it is immoral. Okay. Let's look at go to Romans chapter 1. So when our standard of thinking is lowered, or the rank lowers, then the door is unlocked. The door of wickedness is unlocked. And so as we're turning to Romans 1 there, think about for a second the idea that people might use the excuse, well, I'm human. I'm just human. You know, that's... Yeah, I know it's not right, but I'm just human. So what they're doing is they're lowering their thought of themselves, of what God expects of them, and they're using that as an excuse to do whatever they want to do. Yes.
Another kind of word that would work good for this is passive.
Passive. Yeah, passive would work. And that's kind of, you know, something we maybe even talked about in the last few weeks too, is that to love righteously, it's not by accident. You have to be intentive. You have to have intent to run. But if you don't, if you're passive about it, whether you love righteously or hate righteously, if we're passive about it, we're really doing the opposite. And so that would be another word there to describe that, is that we have lowered ourselves and not met what God has expected of us, and so we're not being intentive or intentional in it. And so Romans 1, it's a longer passage here, 21 through 32.
Wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the
corruptible god or an image in the likeness of a corruptible man, and of birds and four-footed animals and crawling creatures. And how far?
Verse 32, please.
32? Therefore God gave them over to the lust of their hearts, to impurity, so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. For they exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason God gave them over to dishonorable passions, for their females exchanged the natural function for that which is unnatural. And in the same way, also the males abandoned the natural function of the female and burned in their desire towards one another, males with males committing indecent acts and receiving in their own persons the due penalty of their error. And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them over to an unfit mind to do those things which are not proper. Having been filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice, they are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, violent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful. And although they know the righteous requirements of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them.
Okay, so there's quite a bit here. We're not going to go into detail on everything, but the big picture that he's given there is that, you know, they knew God, they did not honor him as God in verse 21. They're a foolish heart, and even so God gave them over to a depraved mind in verse 24, gave them over to their lusts of their heart. And notice there, you'll see some words that we have in Ephesians 5, 3, and 4, impurity, that their bodies may be dishonored, which we talked about if in Adam and Eve's state prior to lowering the level, there was no shame. But when we have that lower level, if you will, there's shame in that. But if we elevate our thinking back to God's thinking and follow that, then there's no shame in that. But it says here that their bodies were dishonored, and then they exchanged the truth of God for a lie and so on. And it even goes down to say that they were greedy. They did things that weren't proper. They were filled with wickedness and evil and murder and envy and strife and so on. So a couple things there is that you first have the obvious that they've lowered the moral standard of God in marriage there. They obviously talk about some things there that they have changed, and God has given them over to that way of thinking, because it's not because God made them that way. It's because they didn't see fit to honor God as who he was. And so God let them do what they wanted. Kyle talked about choice this morning. Someone doesn't accidentally go to hell or heaven. You choose where you go. And you don't accidentally choose, you don't accidentally get punished. You choose that. And they weren't just thrown aside because that's what God chose for them. They chose that. And so the example here that he's given here, that God gave them over to that because they wanted it. Okay? So the other thing that I want to point out, you think that you have to have that homosexual relationship to have wickedness or greed or evil or murder or strife? Like that, Paul's not writing that in like, okay, they first were in those acts and then they were given over, then they did that. No, that's not the in the context there is that they're doing those things because they don't see fit to honor God as who he is. They're worshiping the creature rather than the Creator. And we look at that and we think, okay, and Paul uses that as an example, the four-footed animals and crawling creatures, but he also says corruptible man. Okay, and so we think of idols and we think, oh, there's idols of something, there's idols of birds, there's idols of the sun god or the moon god or Artemis or whatever. But the idols that we have are the gods that we make that aren't really physical idols. They're spiritual idols that are in the way. And so just it doesn't have to be a statue of an image physically. It can be an image or even a form of God, of the true God, that we have of our own appetite. Okay? And the Jews would be guilty of that. When they didn't recognize who Jesus was, they chose a form of God, even though it was similar to God, they chose a form of him. Like even the golden calf. What did they say? Blessed be, or they worshiped the Lord who led them out of Egypt, it says. They bowed before the image. Well, they made the image of God there an image of their own appetite because they didn't want to go before God because they were too scared. They made it one that they could, of their own appetite, that they could approach in their state that they were in. They didn't want to change. They wanted to make a God of their own appetite. And so when we're looking at that there, baseness is the same as immorality, and it is something that we don't elevate our thinking to God's way of thinking. So, kind of going a little bit on what I mentioned this morning, I don't like just to beat this dead horse, but why do you think abortion is as rampant as it is? Just think about it for a second. Why would abortion be as rampant? Obviously, ungodliness would be an obvious answer. But it's a little bit more than that. What you can throw out an answer. Why do you think abortion is pushed so much? Maybe you think anything. Do you think that a strong, independent woman mindset isn't part of that? I'm not saying that, again, that women can't work, but the thing is, what's an excuse for abortion? Well, so she's just got, you know, in high school. And I'm not saying the guy's not a dirtbag, but the reason for abortion, well, she's going to not be able to go to college now. She's not going to have a career. She's not going to do this. And they've taken it and they've made it so that it's more important for her to have a career than for her to be a mother. They've destroyed the godly woman. Now, on the guy's side, yes, the guy's a dirtbag if he's leaving her and not supporting her and doing that, okay? That's wrong for him, too. But that's also been created by an ungodly system as well, because they destroyed the godly man as well. They destroyed the guy that takes responsibility and treats women with respect or whatever, that he's just leaving her out to fend for herself because he doesn't care. No, he's not taking the responsibility.
Well, they made abortion way too easy.
Way too easy, yeah, yeah. Way too easy. And they've used the under the deal of the 12-year-old that gets raped, that's pregnant, that needs, that's going to die in birth, which if that happens, I mean, if that's all we want to talk about, then let's talk about that. But you can't use that example for a wide version of independence. You know, that's what they're using that for. Good. Right. Yeah. And so, and again, that's not exactly our topic this morning, but the principle there is that we have lowered the level of how God, lowered the standard, lowered the rank. We went down to the base, if you will. Base that's not, I mean, I know that's not exactly what the word means, but that's kind of my thought was, is that we've lowered ourselves down to just the base product, lower than what God wants us to exceed to. Okay? And I know that's maybe not what the word means, but that's kind of what I was thinking as we're doing that, is we're lowering the rank. We're lowering the expectation. And so even though we might not be purposely doing that, if we're not going against it, we have lack of morals, that's immoral. Yeah. Yeah, cowards.
They know it's wrong, but they don't want to speak up.
Right. Right. Yeah, they're afraid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're afraid. And they don't want to take a stand, and then they also have bought into an ungodly idea. So they don't want to take a stand, and then they, maybe if they did, then they still cave because they don't know how to.
A lot of people say, it's none of my business.
Right. Yeah. Oh, it's none of my business, so I guess I'll just let it go. You know? So that's something that lack of morals is still immoral. Cal? Say something. I was actually going to bring that up. That was a good thing you brought it up. I didn't have it in my notes. But yeah, it doesn't mean that God is not saying don't take the speck out. The speck's still a problem. Yeah. But the excuse, the way that that's used, like you say, is that you can't take the speck out of my eye because you have a log in your eye. And so neither problem gets solved, you know. But that's kind of what that's used for. That's not how God intended that to be used for. Right. Yes.
Sometimes people think that, and that's not what I was talking about either. It's saying
right.
Remove that from yourself and then go talk to your brother about this stuff.
Right.
It's
right.
Not saying not to address it.
Right. So Ephesians 5 again. So with that idea then, so when we're looking at baseness or just lowering the standard. So, I mean, we touched a little bit on it when we looked at Adam and Eve, where when you lower the standard, that's when there's shame. Okay, even though people nowadays, you could point to a ton of people and say they have no shame in their immorality, but what in that standard there it should be shameful, even though their conscience doesn't make it shameful for them. It's still shameful for them, okay? So immorality, we're not going to maybe go intently on immorality, but I want to look at impurity because it kind of talks about the same, but it can be more broad than immorality, okay? Impurity can. Let's turn to, in Ephesians 5, verse 3, it talks about, but do not let immorality or any impurity. So let's turn to Titus 1, Titus chapter 1. Titus chapter 1. Someone want to read verse 15 and 16, please.
To the pure, all things are pure. To those who are defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. But both their mind and their conscience are defiled. They profess to know God, but by their deeds they deny him, being detestable and disobedient and worthless for any good deed.
Okay, so to the pure, all things are pure is not just talking about immorality, okay? The pure, or morality or immorality, it's not talking about that. It's not only limited to that. Because you can have a pure mind and be pure about other things, and you can have a defiled mind and be defiled in mind about other things other than just immorality or something like that. So when we're looking at impurity, there, it's not that impurity doesn't have to mean an impure act, but the one who lacks morals And you could say impurity was accepting of something, or since we use the example, accepting of abortion. Okay, I would think that would be considered impure. Okay, and so to the pure, everything is pure, and that is wrong. But to the impure, the one who lacks morals, the one who lacks godly thinking, it's like, well, is that really wrong, though? Because I can kind of see with the 12-year-old that maybe she needs the abortion. And so you're choosing to murder somebody over hoping to save someone, and you might not lose the one. But that's used for a reason to murder somebody. It's justified for that reason. It's justified because, well, she's young and so on. But that's not pure. That way of thinking is that, well, we're really not created how God says we're created. We're really not. I mean, that goes even deeper than just the fact of an abortion. Well, then you start rationalizing, well, maybe a baby's really not a baby until they're born, you know, instead of actually what the scriptures talks about being at conception and how God has planned that out, and how even through biblical examples of immoral things happening, God has used the child maybe to do things great. And so that's the thing, is that when the mind is defiled to start with, then everything is impure. And you start rationalizing, and it's impure according to biblical standards, but it's not impure to them, and that's why they're rationalizing things that way. But to the pure, everything is pure, and it's like, that is wrong. Okay, and so again, it's not just talking about immorality or anything like that, or anything sexual, but it is talking about something like abortion, or whatever else it is, euthanasia. Okay, I used to think that was talking about young people in Asia, but it's really but I mean, like, well, you know, I mean, that guy, you know, he's getting kind of up there, and he's kind of suffering now, you know, and it might just be better just to knock him off. I mean, but that's what you start thinking, you know, if it's not pure. So impurity can be passed, can be more than immorality. Sure. Yeah, that idea, yeah, is that it's painted as, even though they didn't do it, they're painting it as courageous, and they're painting it as something good.
Yeah.
And so that thought, again, there, they're encouraging some people, so when things get tough, just get out of it. You know, it doesn't have to be actually even doing it. You know, it's someone supporting what they're doing. You have something? Okay, let's turn to James chapter 4. So we can't approve of impure behavior and be pure. So James chapter 4, verse 17. Did I say 19? My note says 19, but it's actually verse 17. So James 4, verse 17. Okay, so when we talk about approving of immoral behavior, it's impossible to approve of immoral behavior and be pure, or impure behavior and be pure, or immoral behavior and be moral, or unrighteous behavior and be righteous, whatever way you want to phrase that. It is something that if we don't do the right thing, if we know what is right and don't do the right thing, you know, we're really... look at my note here. Oh, we are doing something that is unrighteous. Now, the thing that this is kind of used for sometimes, and this would include this, but it's more than just this, is the idea of, you know, like giving a meal to someone. And people use, when Jesus used the passage or the parable of the sheep and the goats, where they didn't go visit him in prison and they didn't go visit him, or give him a drink or hungry or clothe him. And they use that actually as a very legalistic, limited physical thing. Well, I helped the old lady across the street, or you know, I went and swept off her porch, whatever. All things that are good to do, and this is they're all within the idea of, in the principle of doing what is right. But it is more than that. Doing what is right sometimes is not being passive and actually being proactive and standing up against wickedness. That's also doing what is right. And when we don't do what is right, that's equivalent to what Jesus is saying, is you didn't give me a drink when I was thirsty. That's a metaphorical speaking that he's using there, a metaphorical example. Yes, the physical example of some of that, of doing it for each other and helping each other out, would be in that. But the point of that is showing the character of the person and showing what their true character is, because if we have the right character, then we're going to do that. We're going to be those kind of people physically. But it's going to be a little deeper than that. We're also going to stand up against wickedness and help those who can't. Or maybe help those who are on the back side of that, where they need help getting through that or whatever it is. So it's not just limited. We have to elevate our thinking to God's standard. We can't have a baseness style of character. We have to elevate our thinking, elevate our standard. Sure. Which one's that? What translation? Okay.
I just don't really like how they word it, and it's basically what you're saying, but so if you know of an opportunity to do the right thing today, yet you refrain from doing it, you're guilty of sin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if there's opportunity or whatever, that's what, you know, the type of character, it's all about character. It's not about checking off a deed off the list. Well, I gave water, and that's why when those on the goats, when they come and they're like, when did we ever see this? We don't see you on our list that we ever passed you by, or I mean, they don't say that. But that's that idea, is that they're looking at it from we never did this to you, and Jesus is using it metaphorically speaking, and so when we don't do that, that character is going to show out there. Now, granted, I understand there's times when there's people just looking for money, and we have to use wisdom in that too, because we can't just, I'm not just going to go hand over money to people because they can use it for other things and bad things. But so we have to use wisdom with that too, and that's why I'm not talking about not doing that or trying to make anybody feel guilty for not doing that. I'm more talking about the character and using our wisdom of how we can help somebody and be at ready to help someone if they need it or whoever it is. Turn back to Ephesians 5 again. So we see in verse 3, we see the word greed. So let no immorality or impurity or greed even be named among you, as it is proper among the saints. So the Greek word for greed means advantage or covetousness. So if you think about that for a second, sometimes we can look at covetousness as, well, what's an example of covetousness? Or let's use greed. What's an example of greed? What do you think about when you think of greed?
Greed?
Yeah.
I think probably the first thing you think about is money.
Okay.
People associate greed with money.
Right. Right. So, if you didn't share your money with me, you'd be greedy.
Well, if you have money, I'd be greedy. Yeah.
Okay. So, but that's the thought. Go ahead. Yeah.
But if you were mad at Brandon for not sharing his money with you, then you would be greedy.
Yeah. So, but the thought is, though, is greed is often portrayed as people not sharing their things with someone, or not spreading it, or, no, they're just greedy. you know, because they're keeping it all themselves. They're greedy.
But couldn't that also be greedy? You have one thing that's kind of like, okay, I got to keep up with the next door neighbor,
right.
So I need this. And
right. And that's why. And that's why covetousness would be a better translation, because it's, you know, we think of greed and we think of, well, greed is that, well, you're not sharing with me, but covetousness is that I'm envying what you have and I'm coveting what you have. So greed, the way that America portrays it, is that someone not sharing the wealth with me. But covetousness is that I'm desiring someone else's stuff. And so let's turn to a spot that this word is used, to Luke chapter 12. Luke 12, and this Greek word for greed is used here, or a Greek word for covetousness is used here. And again, another, to kind of pound that home a little bit more, is that another form of that word is advantage. So you're looking at how I can have the advantage. Okay, that's that idea there with that word. So in Luke 12, 13 through 15. Okay, so first off, I want to point out in verse 15, he says, beware and be on guard against every form of greed. See that, and I don't mind the way that that's used there if it's translated greed, and you could still the same thing with, you could probably translate it covetousness, but when you think of greed in America or worldly, people think of one form of greed, is that you're not sharing with me. But Jesus is saying here that there's multiple forms of greed here. Be on guard against every form of greed. So the other thing that needs to ask is that did this man earn what he was wanting? Was it something that he earned?
So what's the difference between greed and equity? Say you have won somebody else, so
right. Mm-hmm. So the difference would be is that like in this guy's case here, he didn't earn this money that he was wanting. It was an inheritance from his father. So it, what the greed or the covetousness, the difference between maybe that and equity would be that he is desiring someone else's and he is coveting what someone else has earned or someone else has built or whatever, where it's not wrong for someone to build up and to be rich. I mean, Abraham was rich and he was righteous. Even when I skip over the New Testament, Philemon was rich. Barnabas had wealth. Solomon, you know, back in the Old Testament again, was rich as well. Job was wealthy, lost his wealth, but then he had more wealth after the fact, after he went through his stuff. So there's all kinds of examples you could use there for wealth, and that it wasn't unrighteous for them to have wealth or equity. But greed would be is that I desire that, and you owe it to me. You know, I'm coveting that.
Which would be similar to what Ken's talking about there, saying that they, people want equality.
Right, equality, yeah.
Financial equality is the lower people want, the bigger,
right, yeah, yeah.
People to, yeah, drop down so they, to give them half of theirs, so they're the same.
Right.
Similar
thing, similar, yeah. And it would be that they're coveting, really, to use the, you know, people look at greed and they think, well, I'm not greedy because I just want what they have, but
and
they're really coveting.
To, it's not necessarily them wanting just more money, they just want the same as that guy.
Right.
And the same as, like Doris was saying, it's not, it's seeing what the neighbor's got and wanting the same as they've got, the
right,
same or better,
mm-hmm,
than what they've got. Not,
yeah,
you know, keeping up with the Joneses.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What that Greek word would be for greed.
Right. And you know, this is, you know, it's interesting, this is an example. I think this word for greed or covetousness is only used like 10 times in the New Testament. And an example that's used is not, I don't think it's ever used. It could be implied, because Jesus talks about a rich man, and it's easier to go through an eye of a needle, a camel goes through an eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom. But at this example here is talking about someone who doesn't have and is wanting what they supposedly is owed to them in an inheritance. Okay, and then we see that happen all the time now. When parents die and inheritance split up, and everybody makes sure I get what I got, because I'm owed that. Well, then they really weren't owed that. Then the parents should have probably given it to someone else completely, because it made it tore the family apart. And that's covetousness or greed. It's not that they were getting. It's not that they were building their own business up or anything, and they should have been given and keeping it or whatever. It's not that was the situation. It's that they didn't have it and they wanted it, and so that also is greed. As well as, I mean, people can build up their wealth, because he continues on in the example after this here. About the rich man who is very productive in that parable there in Luke chapter 12, and he eventually tore down his barns and built bigger barns, and you eat, drink, and be merry, you done well, you know, and then his soul is required. So that is also greed as well as desiring something that you don't have and you think is owed to you. And so that's where the covetousness could apply to both there. You know, the rich man is coveting his things, I have these things, or the person here that didn't have the things, and they're coveting what they should be owed or supposedly should be owed. Let's go back to Ephesians 5. Ephesians 5, verse 4 talks about, so we have the word filthiness, or it's translated filthiness, but it's baseness. But there must be no baseness. Or silly talk or coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving thanks. So silly talk, what's silly talk and coarse jesting?
What's the verse?
Verse 4, Ephesians 5. What's first come when you think of silly talk?
Cussing.
What's that?
Cussing,
okay. Anything else? Okay. What about coarse jesting?
Dirty jokes.
Okay. So when we're looking at that, and again, in under the kind of the thought we've been going on, is that it's not always exactly what is perceived by the culture. So it's not always. As we're going to see, silly talk is not limited to cussing. Of course, jesting, I mean, you could say that's really encapsulated in dirty jokes, I guess, in somewhat. But when we're looking at that, and we're looking at it's not limited to a dirty joke. Of course, jesting is not. Let's turn back to Ephesians 4, verse 29.
Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace for those who hear.
Okay, so Paul hits it on both ends here, and we talked about this when we went through it. That the unwholesome word is not limited to cussing. And the unwholesome word is not, or the silly talk is not limited to cussing. And the coarse jesting is not limited to a dirty or a crude joke, necessarily. As what we would think, I should say that. As what we would think is crude. I'm not saying it doesn't involve, that those don't fit into that. But when we look at in the idea of the unwholesome word, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word that is good for edification. See, we take the half the verse and we make the point out of the half the verse, and we don't finish out the rest of the verse, and we say, because when he defines, it's one thing to say what it isn't, But if you don't define what you should be doing, then you have nowhere to go from there. Then you're just not doing well. Then you, that's where you start getting law and legalism. Is that, well, I'm not doing this. Well, I'm not being immoral. I'm not performing the abortion. I'm not a homosexual. You know, I'm not immoral. I'm not impure. I mean, I'm not the one thinking that someone, you know, maybe should have their life terminated at the end of their life when they're suffering. That's what we start rationalizing and thinking that because we think about it from a legalist point of view. But when we look at it from a character point of view, and then silly talk or coarse jesting, as well as we've talked about immorality and impurity, and we look at the unwholesome word there, that unwholesome word, I think it's seven times used in the New Testament. And we're going to go to Matthew chapter 7. And we'll look at it here a couple times it's used. Matthew 7:13 through 23. Please, yeah. Okay, so when we're looking at the idea of silly talk or coarse jesting, and we have the idea of the unwholesome word from Ephesians 4, and we look at it from that view, and not a legalist view, we're going to see here in Matthew 7 that word is used in verse 17 and 18, and it's used as bad. Okay, when they're the bad fruit or the bad tree, referencing some of that. Okay, so but in that parable, in that metaphor that Jesus is using there, he's talking about false prophets. Well, that's easy enough to get behind because false prophets means the crazy wacko guys that are just sitting there on, you know, maybe they have some cult that they're a part of, or maybe they think that they're Jesus incarnate and they're, you know, coming back to earth and people are following them, or maybe they convinced everybody that the world was ending a certain time and people are following them and they live in their little colony or compound, and they don't, you know, those guys, those are the false prophets. Except for when it gets on further, he actually talks about people who will say on Judgment Day, "Lord, Lord, didn't we prophesy in your name? Didn't we cast out demons? Didn't we perform many miracles in your name?" So he's not talking about people who are the crazies. He's talking about the people that aren't using pure, undefiled words. He's talking about the people who are a little bit off. He's not talking about, I mean, he is talking about the crazies, yes. I mean, but the crazies aren't going to, they know who they serve. They're not going to sit and say, "Oh, didn't we serve you?" No, they didn't. You served Satan. You knew you served Satan. They're not going to sit and say that on that day. But there's going to be people who look really good, but their words are rotten. Their words are unwholesome. Their words are silly talk or crude. And I'm not saying, again, that I'm not trying just to make it broad just because, I mean, I think it does talk about some of that stuff, specifically, but that's still showing the character of the person, the the crude joking or the silly talk shows the character. And what comes out of the mouth of a man, Jesus says in Matthew 15 and in Mark 7, is what defiles the man, because it comes from the heart. That's what defiles the man. It shows what's inside. And so a crude joke can be more than just a joke you're telling with your buddies. A crude joke or crude talk, or what that Greek word means, is ready wit or something that it's humorous maybe, but it's also maybe low jesting, or if you were to put someone down. And it wouldn't necessarily be what we would call a crude joke, but it might be something that is putting someone down, and we get humor from it. It is, that can also be coarse jesting, or silly talk can be a number of different things rather than just cursing. Or we use silly talk, but it's not something that is like, oh, it's just harmless. There's a reason that Paul wrote about it. It's unwholesome. It's don't let unwholesome words proceed from your mouth, but only that which is for edification and for building up. And that in that light is what he's talking about that there. So when we look at that coarse jesting and silly talk, it has to be viewed in that light. Yeah, okay, maybe we're not really just putting someone down, but are we building them up? And if we're not building them up, it's an unwholesome word. And so it develops more, and it points more to the character rather than just the legalist idea of, well, this is what I don't do. It points to the character more. So unless we elevate our thinking to God's standard, then even though we might not legally, or what most people think, might not be doing some of these things, we could do some of these things, and it could hurt our character, and it will hurt our character, because we're not intentionally doing them, we're not intentionally being immoral, but the lack of morals is just as bad. We're not intentionally being impure, but the lack of purity is just as bad. So there's no in between there. It's either you're pure or you're impure, you're moral or you're immoral, you're greedy or you're not. And so that's kind of what I have for today. Does anybody have any comments or questions or anything?
Well, the term silly talk, the definition of the Greek word is foolish. Foolish talk. Mm-hmm.
Foolish talk, yeah.
And I'm not sure why you wouldn't just say foolish talk there.
Right.
And, like, for example, like when my girls are being silly, I tell them, quit being silly. And because it's not beneficial to them or anybody around them,
right,
either. It's it's annoying, and it's just not help. It's just not good for anything. Yeah. And that might seem like a simple analogy, but really, that's if you're just foolish talk, doesn't necessarily mean bad language or foul words. Mm-hmm. It's all things that language you're using that's not good for for edification. It's not prosperous for people, for yourself, for those around you.
Right.
And it and this may be this might be a stretch a little bit here too, because I think the bulk of this verse is talking about more foolish talk, but I think you could look at it as teaching things that are false, or false teachings, and like things like that you need to be careful of that.
Right.
Make sure that things that you're saying align with Scripture, and they're beneficial to those that are hearing them, I guess.
Does that Greek word for foolish talk comes from two Greek words, and moros lego, which lego means to say, but moros means dull, stupid, or foolish.
Yeah.
And so it's to say something dumb, basically.
Right.
Say something stupid. Anything else? Okay, well, we'll stop there this week.